I'm Bob Boylan with this Plus One podcast. There's a joyful new album from Phoenix. It's the Paris-based band's first record since 2013. Te Amo took the better part of the past 4 years to make. And on this edition of All Songs Considered, a conversation with Phoenix on their work habits, on how they create a palette of sounds for each new album, and on making a joyful record at a time when Paris has seen such horrific terror attacks. I ask the band to play songs by their favorite artists, and through that lens, we get a clear idea of how this band thinks about the music they make. Their song choices on this guest DJ show involve a lot of dance music, but not for the reasons I'd expect. It's a conversation with many surprises and a look into the incredible detail and craft they put into their new music. Laurent Brankowitz and Thomas Mars were at the NPR Bureau in New York City. I was in Washington, D.C. We start off by talking about a song from their childhood. It's a song by Alain Chamfort. Thomas explains.
It's a classic French 80s song. In that era, Alain Chamfort was working with Serge Gainsbourg. It was everywhere. It was on the radio. It was a more complex and ambitious record from this mainstream character who's sort of a French Brian Ferry, really handsome, and that was the vinyl. My parents had that vinyl, and
let's hear a little bit of it.
D'ici et voir d'autres pays, m'enfuir loin d'ici vers d'autres paradis. Un jour se dire go. Chassez mes troubles, chassez mes peines. Chasse, chasse d'ivoire, juste histoire d'ivoire. À la place des filles féroces, d'éléphants et de rhinocéros.
Now, we're a few hundred miles away, and I can't see your faces, but I can only imagine that you're smiling right now.
Yeah, it's true. We were smiling so.
Yeah.
It felt very good. You know, when you're very far from home, those songs, suddenly they mean a lot. When we are on tour, those songs from our childhood, they become very important, very powerful. So yeah, we were smiling and we were dreaming.
That song is so ambitious for him and also new in terms of arrangements, that when that clap, when you fade it, there's a clap in the end that looks like the DJ is mixing another song in a strange, but it's the same song. Mm. And that's how I heard it as a kid. I thought they were switching to a different song. But no, it's the same one.
Let me see if I can get there. Hang on.
Yeah, so you think a new song is coming. But no, it's just a guy playing with the newest possible keyboard. Yeah, sample.
What year is this, do
we think? I would say between 79 and 81. I don't know exactly.
And you would have been roughly how old, each of you?
Four.
Yeah.
But it's a good song. And the lyrics are really good. It's about a guy who's a French guy imagining he's some kind of ivory hunter, you know? Hunting for ivory. Ivory.
Oh, I see.
So it's about, you know, dreaming of another life that is not yours. really not yours.
And this would have been on the radio. This is like pop. This is a pop song, right?
This is a pop song, but it's a weird pop song because he came from a very successful record, and this was successful, but it was he could only make this record because of the previous success. I feel like that's his Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band in a way. it's his ambitious one, yeah.
And say his name one more time for me.
Alain Chamfort.
There was in his voice to me a little bit of Bowie in it. Do you hear that?
Yeah, he was a Bowie fan, that's for sure. Yeah, you could hear that?
I did, absolutely. Yeah, and in the same way you could hear it in another artist you mentioned, which is Brian Ferry, the singer for Roxy Music. Let me play a little bit of a song that you all picked from a bit earlier. This has been about 1975. It was when disco music was kind of coming up, and artists who you wouldn't expect to include dance beats in their songs were putting dance beats in their songs. So this is a calmer song on the Bowie record. He recorded in Philly. I'll play a little bit of Can You Hear Me from Young Americans.
Once we were lovers, can they understand? Silver others, I was your, I was your man. Don't talk of heartaches.
Hate to fade you down, David, but that is, you know, until that moment, it's one of the sleepier cuts on the record. I'm surprised by the choice, but there does seem to be a theme of yearning in the music you love.
That song we rediscovered when we were in the studio because we played a lot of videos from the Cher show, and she does sing that song with Bowie, and it makes it hard to listen to this version because I miss Cher's voice on the verse sometimes. I want to hear vocals. And it was both inspirational for the music, but also visually. There's a song on the record that's called Fior di Latte. Mm-hmm. And it was right around then that we saw those visuals of Bowie's face with pastel colors and then switching to Cher's face with other, and the whole thing was very summery and ice creamy to us and very overwhelming. That's one of my go-to videos if you feel, you know, if you need a little cheering up, comfort, that's the ultimate one for me.
The musical equivalent of ice cream then, is what
yes.
you're saying. and this song I'm going to play, which is, I hope I do this right, Fior di Latte, isn't that a cheese?
It's also a cheese, but it's meant to be the ice cream.
I see, okay. Well, let me play some of it.
So much.
It's hard to fade this down, I'm sorry. Tell me what's going on in this song. How did this song come to be?
There is a...
That's the first radio play.
Yeah.
It's an important moment. Huh? Yeah,
awesome. It's the first time we hear it on the radio.
It's good. It's ready for... It's traveling at the speed of light, ready to be picked up by another civilization in a distant solar system.
I like that. It's just left the stratosphere.
Exactly, yeah.
What, the distance and time between you, the time you finish this record and now the radio, is there a time like that you're not listening to it and then you hear it again for the first time? Is that this moment for you?
It's not really about the time. It's more the fact that suddenly it belongs not only to us but to... And for it's very important in the process, the added beauty that the listener projects. We value that very much. So it's important.
Yeah, it's like when your child grows up and now you've done all you can. You've put all your thought and work into it, and now it will become what it will become. And
there is at the end of the chorus, right when you faded, people don't hear
fading right at the wrong time.
No. We could hear it, but I'm just jumping on the occasion that there is the sound of a kiss that. That no one really, at the end of the chorus, there's a double kiss. That's a signature double kiss. So it's at the end of every verse. To hear it.
And the song is about, I mean, obviously, there's brightness here.
It's a song about desire, I would say. Fior di latte being the most erotic ice cream the Italian could imagine. So I would say it's our kind of Little Red Corvette was Prince's choice. We as European, we picked the Fior di Latte.
It's also a song about being a mama's boy, which a lot of Italian kids are. They have this strange controversial fantasies about the mama, and sometimes it crosses over into sexual fantasies. But that's a strange Italian feature, and the Fior di Latte is like, it's about being a mama's boy.
Wow, I didn't see that coming.
I hope so. I hope you didn't see that coming.
Yeah, no, not at all. Help me imagine a day in the life of Phoenix before the record. Like, okay, so you're going to start a new record. What are your sort of habits and from inception to song?
We pick up a place, and then, you know, at this time it was in an old operetta house in Paris. It's been converted in a modern kind of venue and museum, and they had a little studio on the last floor. So that was step one. And then step two is to find the right companions in terms of musical equipment. We refer to it as our palette, you know, like painters. We pick up carefully a few keyboards and guitars we feel are going to be good companions. And then we go there every day, you know, like from 10 to 7.
Which is the working day.
That's our working day. Yeah. And then we go there day after day, and we just spend hours writing music without really thinking about if it's good or bad. Then we edit it, and this is when the problems, the headache, and the frustration. That's the bad part.
I want you to just imagine something. Imagine you're a band in 1964, and you have to put out two albums a year.
we would have a different career.
I think the issue is that there's no more limits in terms of music. Everything is possible. So most of the time we spend in the studio, we spend it to create a frame to just have those limits to have something coherent in the end. But usually, I think when you're pressured by time and by, you know, when you have only a few options of instruments, when everything's not interchangeable and it's not a huge world of possibilities, things happen faster, and this is also a time where you have to reshape so much the sound itself that it's extremely time consuming, just because there is so much music that's been out already and that you need a new direction. So I think that if we would be, I mean, it's pretentious of me to say that, but if we would be in the 60s, I wouldn't be surprised if we would come up with way more, you know, with two albums a year. That seems possible to me. Uh-huh. But I think it's the time that call for this long gap between records. It's also helpful to create mystery, which is a little, which is hard these days to keep mystery. So we need, I mean, us personally, we need to go away a little bit and stay and have this austere life in the studio to come up with something interesting.
You're also probably all raising families and stuff at this point in life, right?
Yeah, but we do work in office hours. Uh-huh. I think because it's a miracle to us that this is our work, because it doesn't feel like one. So the fact that we treat it like, well, that we make it our work is even more a victory to us. So we don't really need to have night hours and stay late in the studio to come up with things. It's more the, like Blanco was saying, it's the editing part that takes all our time and energy.
What, if you think about this album and this selection of songs, pick me the one that, when it came down to the editing, that was the hardest and maybe turned out to be the most rewarding. I don't know, but play, pick me the, and tell me if there's a moment there I should listen for that, or a sound or something that was hard to decide or work through.
A lot of time it's about, you know, preserving the little magic that was in the very, very early take. Mm-hmm. And there's this little thing that is very hard to describe, and the charm. We spend a lot of time just trying to build a song around it without destroying it, which is sometimes very time-consuming and scary, because you know you can lose it with one bad decision. So yeah. I'm not sure if people understand what I mean, but it's really about that. You know, we have something like an emotion that we recognize in this magma, this chaos of, you know, ideas, and we have to make sure that it's there in on the record. Like 1-2 years after, this emotion should be there and magnified, I don't know. Yeah.
So what should I play?
What should you play? J-Boy, you know, it came almost as a whole piece, you know. The first take is very close to the final thing, but...
But it took 2 years.
But it took 2 years. Yeah. It's like we missed 2%, and it took us a very long time to get there, which is weird. Our life is a bit strange, but...
Yeah, here we go.
You get used to it.
We added in J-Boy, if you play the opening, we added once the sounds were matching what we wanted to hear, there was a big relief, and we kept the I'm exhaling. Yeah, that that's a sound of relief. That was a natural that we kept because we were happy that we saw the end of this journey.
This is J-Boy. Let's listen to it a little bit.
Something in the middle of the side of the store got your attention and asked for more. I was excited to be part of your world, to belong, to be loved, to be mostly the two. But something I was stealing for a reason at all. They hit me higher than a disco ball. But you talked, I'm gonna let me go. Picasso, Michelangelo. Something by the juice you wear. Shiny, shiny fingers on your wrists. And at the masquerade ball, you trapped in a vault and an empty aquarium. Suddenly you're out of the woods. Inside of an alley, you're out of words. When I thought it was radium at first. Just because of you. So bad, is it so true?
J-Boy, which the letters, I guess, stand for just because of you. There's a line that says, something I was stealing for no reason at all. They hang me higher than a disco ball. There's lots of references, and in the, some of the songs that you've picked, references to an era of music that is painful for some and pleasure for others, the disco movement. What is your attraction to music, or at least it seems to me, music that's so long ago and feels like days gone by?
It's an interesting question. The time doesn't really matter. I think what we like is the fact that I think we would never have been to one of these disco Studio 54. We like it, you know, from the French perspective of people who never go there, you know. And mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that if we had been around, we would have hated it. But
I was around, and yes.
Exactly. But it's exactly why we love, you know, like Italian trying to do disco music, or David Bowie trying to be a R&B artist. You know, we love this moment where people dream about something and they make it, you know, more beautiful than it actually is.
I love that.
And so distortion is, to us, is very important.
So if I were to ask you to pick me from your list of songs, from things that you love, a piece of music that also illustrates that notion that someone is doing something sort of outside of what they normally would do, you know, in a musically masquerading, what would that piece of music be?
Yeah, that would be Lucio Battisti, Amarsi un po'.
And who is?
It's kind of an Italian version of, you know, dance music from the US, but reimagined through the perspective of an Italian genius, because he's a genius.
What year was this done?
76.
Okay.
Could it be?
Seven, maybe.
So in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's listen a little. No.
È un po' fiorire. Aiuta, sai, a non morire. Senza nascondersi. Manifestandosi. Si può eludere la solitudine, però volersi bene, no, partecipare è difficile. Quasi come volare, ma quanti ostacoli.
Roughly, what is the song about?
About love, of course.
Okay, that's the end of the sentence. That's it. No, translate the title for me.
Amarsi un po' means to love a little bit. To love, no, it's easy to love a little bit, but to really love something, that's the hard part. This guy, Lucio Battisti, he worked with a lyricist called Mogol, he's still alive, Mogol. Uh-huh. And he was really, really a genius in terms of songwriting. And he wrote maybe 50 classics, you know, for us, you know, classics in terms of the way, you know, he tells a story in a very unique way, very Italian. And Lucio Battisti is a very famous Italian. He's a huge, you know, this song was like number one in Italy for like 6 months. It was also a period in history, you know, where when very good songs were at the top of the charts. And this happens a few times, and it's been a long time it didn't happen. I feel it's a good moment, you know, when the good and the successful are aligned.
It's a lot of good songs to write.
Yeah, it's a lot. And yeah. But we should do a NPR special on Mogol. We could host that, you know.
Okay. One thing I noticed on your tour date that, and it's extensive, you're not coming to D.C., so you fix that and we'll work that out.
Okay.
Let's do that. I love this
idea. We are in the fall.
Okay, very good. There was a song on the new record, now I can't remember the name of it, that started with what I thought was a Fela Kuti sample. Am I right about that? And
yes.
What song was that?
That's a song called Fleur de Lis.
Can I play a little and then you tell me what's going
on?
Yeah. That's the sample, yeah?
That's, yeah. Expensive Shit is the name of the song.
Ah, yes. That is such a summer hit. I don't know what whether that comes out as a single or not, but boy, that hook's amazing.
Thank you. We don't know if it's on the record. Branco plays a few times the Morse code. He has a Morse code, and he has it live too. So I hope people notice on his keyboard there's a Morse code. That's every time I hear it, I can see it live, because that's a song we don't play live yet. But I can't wait to play it just for that moment to see him play this.
What does it spell out, the Morse code? Does it spell a word?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, huh? I don't know French, so you could just like whisper it in my ear as to what it is, because otherwise I won't get it. Can we say it on the radio? Let's start there.
Yes,
in French.
In French, it of course. Yeah. But there is a tool we use a lot, which is a thing that converts sentences into Morse code, but in MIDI, which is the language, you know.
Oh my gosh!
So we use that a lot because it's kind of it's a generator of rhythm, and we love, you know, to introduce random things.
Right.
We noticed that Chance is a better songwriter than we are.
So for people who don't understand what you were just saying, I'll do my best.
Yeah.
Which is that basically you are typing a phrase into a computer.
Correct.
Then that phrase is generating out of the letters a Morse code. Then that Morse code is turning those whatever the dots and the dashes into notes. You call them MIDI notes, a piece of digital information that will translate then to a keyboard that will then play out a melody, and that will surprise you, and from that surprise comes magic.
Right? Exactly. You're good. You're really good.
I love that you do that. Now, the biggest question, what is the word?
Well, it could be a...
in this song.
It could be... No, in this song, we don't remember.
Okay.
It was a bunch of words that were key. That's something we learned from... That's something they do when they make movies, is that usually when you make a movie, you have so many decisions to make every day that you come up with one of the tricks is you come up with a few words to sum up the movie. And that helps you, you know, if the word is, for instance, a word on this album was gelato, like the ice cream. Right, so right. If we have to choose between two sounds, we'll take the one that sounds the most or that feels the most like it's related to this. And so we would pick up a few words here and there. And but that's always helpful to just not necessarily make the whole thing more coherent, but for us to get some sort of direction and to it's just an excuse to all agree on something sometimes.
I love the way you work. This is just yeah, absolutely very fascinating. It's very deep and very intertwined and thought through. Although there does seem, because you throw in the element of chance, it doesn't feel, what's the word I want to look for, stiff or controlled. There's both a sense of control and a sense of randomness.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
This tension is important.
Yeah. When one more thought, which is a completely different direction, which is that the world from when you started writing this record in 2013, it seems much different than the world when this album finally came out. And you're in the middle of a big city working on this record that was deeply affected by so many events. And I just want to know if how that does or doesn't play into what you do.
Of course, it does. Let's put it this way, I think we could never have released this kind of music in a period of relative happiness, you know. We needed the darkness to come up with this kind of very naive and joyful music.
So it's a counterpoint in ways.
It is, but we didn't control it. It wasn't like a planned decision. It was just what happened, you know, like we write music not really knowing what we're doing, but when it's done, we realize it has some kind of meaning, and this meaning was maybe to create a safe harbor for ourselves, you know, like where we could have hope for the future. I don't know, but it was really uncontrolled.
Mm-hmm. And it's also the time when you're raising families, and that must come into play as well. So the personal and the political.
Yeah, it comes on the. I think it's a very joyful, hedonistic record. Very simple, but at the same time, I think you. I mean, to me, it's very clear that it was made during those times. If you listen to the lyrics, or certain chords are very deep and sad and overwhelming to me, so I can I'm sure if I feel like that eventually you know, other people will see it too. But yeah, we were very surprised when we made just making music, and making music that was very light and joyful was we were the first ones surprised by this.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I hope to see you in DC.
Liron Bronkowitz and Tomar Mars from Phoenix. Their new album is called Te Amo. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.